Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. So a very busy show ahead of us tonight and a full house. Richard Collins is here. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Derek. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much indeed. Amy Nilan is here.
I am indeed. Would the programme be anyway good at all without me?
Well, it would be different, Aina. Niall Hatch is here. Niall!
Hi, Derek. Hi, Richard. Hi, Aina. I'm looking forward to this. It's nice when full studio will have lots of debate.
Lots of debate. And you've all brought something with you. I see, Niall, you've brought a copy of your latest issue of Wings magazine. We'll talk about that later.
Yes, thank you, Derek. Yeah, Birdwatch Ireland's membership magazine, Wings, out now. So, yeah. Full a bumper issue, this one. We're really proud of it. Lovely picture of a kestrel on the cover, one of my favourite birds.
It is a fantastic colour. It's a real reddish brown colour. I never realised the wings were that colour with spots on them.
Yes, there's a lovely male. You can see the contrast there with the grey head and the bluish grey kind of tail. It's a lovely photograph by a very talented photographer called John Carey, and we're very glad to have it.
Well done, John. It's a super picture. And Amy, you've got another big book with you. What is it? Let me show.
Yes.
Let me turn it around there. Let me see the title of it there.
Oh, yeah, I get great books.
Rambling Along the Royal Canal, A Journey into the Heart of Ireland. What's all this about?
Yes, it's written by Tom Dredge, who walked all the way from Dublin along the Royal Canal all the way to the Shannon.
All the way to the Shannon? How long did it take him?
Well,
ages.
It took him 10 days. Well, it took him a long time. But it's about 80 miles or whatever, 100, whatever that is, kilometres. I've just come back from speaking to him. And he was full of enthusiasm about this, not just the wildlife and the plants and the birds, but also the whole buildings that are there, the towns along the way, the fights the landowners had whether they should or shouldn't have the canal. Even back in the 1700s, there were some.
Did
of
you mention the Owl Triangle?
Oh, jingle jangle. Well, I don't know whether Tom would appreciate my wonderful singing, Derek. He doesn't appreciate.
Well, we'll hear it later.
Do.
We'll hear it later, Aina. Anyway, Richard.
You mentioned the Royal Canal and Mountjoy Jail and Brendan Behan. Now, I remember a swan, a female swan that I ringed, set up a nest there near the on the Royal Canal near Mountjoy, and she sat for weeks and weeks and weeks on 6 eggs, and they did not hatch at all. They were infertile or something happened. But the interesting thing about it was the code on the ring was IUD.
So you put a mollock on the poor bird. You put a curse on her, giving her an IUD on her leg.
I don't get it.
Intrauterine device was a contraceptive.
Am I the only person in Ireland who didn't get that?
Well, you don't. You're the only person. You're the only person in this studio who hasn't got a uterus. I jest.
The Royal Canal and the Grand Canal as well are very important for swans, aren't they, Richard?
Absolutely. Well, not so much the canals themselves are interesting, but it is the quarries that really attract the birds. Because to get stone to line the canals, they broke open quarries. The quarries are 100 metres, 200 metres often from the canal. And these ponds are the places where the swans tended to nest. And then when the cygnets were born, they'd take them onto the canal and they'd be sailing up and down. And you say, my God, I didn't find the nest earlier. But the reason you didn't find it was it's 150 yards away in behind that bush.
It allows people to get up close and personal with nature. So you'll see the swans there, you'll see mallards. Moorhen is another bird that's quite easy to see along the canals.
And it's a wonderful place for damselflies and dragonflies. And because the water is so slow moving as opposed to rivers, there's quite a lot of vegetation along the banks. Fast flowing rivers have very little by way of vegetation because it's too fast moving. So for those of us who actually have an interest in plants and an interest in dragonflies and things like that, the Royal Canal is your only man.
Canals are amazing conduits for all sorts of life, not just the birds, of course, but fish and all, to move between sort of in a linear way.
Wildlife corridors are great, and the canal is wonderful. They never actually did anything with it after the transport broke down, after they got railway lines. But they didn't fill them in either, which was great. It was threatened at one point. And as a consequence, we have this wonderful, both the canal, the Royal Canal and indeed the Grand Canal, wildlife corridors all the way from Dublin to the Shannon, which really are worth a lot.
And some of the purest water around. I kept tropical fish many years ago, and we used to replenish the tanks with water. But to get clean, really well oxygenated pristine water. The place to go was the canal.
Oh, it's amazing that, yeah, they still have this longevity. You know, the idea of...
They lined them with puddle clay. Plastic didn't exist in those times, or liners that people make ponds with now. So it was puddle clay, really dense clay, like drain pipes nearly for all the world. And that's what lined the canals when they were building them, and stopped the water flowing away. Because, I mean, they went up. I mean, they were way above the water table. They weren't like rivers in that sense. But the puddle clay held mostly. There was a few bits of it cracked up around Roscommon, but it's all been put back now, and you can navigate on the Royal Canal all the way from Dublin to the Shannon, and you can walk there as well, as Tom did in his book. And it took a huge big tome, and I had a great fun reading it and talking to Tom as well.
Looking forward to hearing it, Aina. And in fact, I'm just thinking back now to the late great Dick Warner, who was the original producer of Mooney Goes Wild here on RT Radio 1, but others will remember him from presenting Waterways. Do you remember the tall man with the long hair and the beard? As he made his way, he circumnavigated all of Ireland at one point, but he went along all the canals, the Royal Canal, the Grand Canal, and every nook and cranny in between, for several series on RT television, which were just beautifully made, wonderfully shot. And the one thing I remember from them is that very soothing sound of the canal boat just going along the channel. It really is a wonderful sound. Anyway, let's go along the Royal Canal now to Dublin 15, where we can say hello to Terry Flanagan, our reporter, who lives just a stone's throw from the Royal Canal. Terence!
That's right, Derek, less than 500 metres from my front door. And the canal, what a wonderful place it is. I love going down there. We've done lots of reports down the canal, from the swans to reports on the terrapins that had been abandoned there. There's a pair of kingfishers there this year, which is wonderful, as are the otters. And the herons are back again. And one thing I noticed about the herons is how tame they are. I remember 20 years ago, you couldn't get anywhere near a heron. The only place, if you wanted to photograph a heron, the only place you could go was down to Dublin Zoo when it was feeding time for the seals and the sea lions down there. Nowadays, you can walk by the herons on the canal, on the towpath, and they just stand there and look at you. But anyway, it's not the canal I'm here to talk to you about tonight. It's this week's report, and it's on butterflies. One thing I've noticed this summer is the amount of butterflies I've had visiting the garden. Not just the numbers, but also the variety. I've got a small buddleia bush, that's the butterfly bush in the garden, and it's been covered in them. Whites, peacocks, red admirals, painted ladies, just to mention a few. And a number of people have also remarked on their abundance this year. So I thought I'd check it out. So I paid a visit to Jesmond Harding of Butterfly Conservation Ireland.
Terry, do you want to come over here?
Right. Oh, I can see them.
Terry, I have a red admiral for you here.
Yeah.
And I've actually got more than just a red admiral, but there's a red admiral here, and you can see that lovely deep black velvet with this scarlet stripes on the forewings and hindwings. Really stunning species.
Do you think that this is the most beautiful of the Irish butterflies? Now, I know you have it on the cover of your book.
I do. It is on the cover of the Irish butterfly book, but I think there's something perfect about it.
Yeah.
The symmetry, the beautiful contrast, and yet it's...
And he's just moving there now from
he's just
flower
moving
to flower.
To flower, yeah.
Knapweed, is it?
It's common knapweed, yeah. It has a long flowering season, but this year, and you can see him just over there,
beautiful.
And he's got some lovely white spots too, near the apex of the forewing.
And
there
he's
he is.
On the, he's on the wing again.
There he is on the wing again, floating around. And I'll tell you what he's actually doing. He's actually feeding up to migrate. He's actually going to leave our shores. When he's fed up enough, he'll leave our shores and head off to southern Europe. Now, this has been a great year for them, Terry. I mean, I remember in late July and early August of this year, I was finding caterpillars everywhere. And it's a tented caterpillar. The caterpillar forms a tent by binding the leaves of nettles together with silk, and they feed within that protective tent because they do have quite a few enemies, especially wasps. So he's survived all that. And there's actually another one. Look, just flew over your head.
Look at the white as well.
The white is lovely, yeah. They really are. It's a gorgeous creature. And I think, you know, sometimes you see something a lot. You think, oh, well, there's another one. I never feel that about the Red Admiral. It's so beautiful that every time I see it, it catches my breath.
But this has been a great year for butterflies, not just Red Admirals, because there's all of the white ones. There's the small tortoise shells. And what I saw... particularly in early August and late August, were the painted ladies.
Yeah, it has. It has been a great year. But Terry, it has to be a great year compared to the previous two. Mm. The figures for the small tortoiseshell. Now, I know people get bored when you mention percentages, but it's worth listening to this. I'm just going to take the small tortoiseshell. The small tortoiseshell between 2008 and 2024, it's declined by 63%. But a lot of that is due to 2023 and 2024's summers, which, if you can call them summers.
They were very wet summers.
They were wet summers, and 2024 was cold as well. Mm. So whatever benefits there are to global warming, and I'm using the word benefits in a mixed sense because it suits some species and not others, and it suits some species in certain parts of Europe and not in others. So it's a mixed picture. It was a disaster for us. I didn't see a small tortoiseshell in my garden in 2024 until the 4th of September. That is unprecedented in my lifetime. That never happened before.
And so you would put that down to the cold, wet weather.
The cold, persistent wet. From late June 2023, it rained. It's essentially it rained. And 2024, while the summer wasn't as wet, it was cold. And cool, wet conditions aren't good for any of our butterfly species. So they all suffered.
Now, coming into 2025, how has the weather changed?
It's changed markedly for the better. I don't know if you remember last February, Terry, we had 11 consecutive days where we had less than half an hour sunshine, direct sunshine a day. Very depressing. March lit up. The lights turned on and the sun came out and there was a great boost in larval development. I was watching rarer species like marsh tilly larvae galloping ahead in their development. I first saw my first on the 8th of May, very, very early for that species in the part of Kildare that I study it in. We had a big boost of populations, and because we have some double brooded or even triple brooded butterflies, double brooded means the species is capable of producing more than one generation of adults a year. They were able to build their populations over the year because of the sustained warmth. And even in July, the second half of July, which was dull, it was warm. Mm-hmm. It was overcast, but it was warm. August, the beginning of August, we had a beautiful week in August, if you can remember, around the middle of the month, and it was sunny and hot and, you know, usual stuff. We started complaining about the heat after a few decent days. But the butterflies weren't complaining. They were getting their business done. And remarkably, on the 12th of August, Terry, in Lullybeg, where I do my butterfly transect, a fixed route walk, which I walk every week from the 1st of April to the 30th of September, I saw a dingy skipper. So what's as you? That butterfly is only meant to have one generation in Ireland, and that's in spring and very early in June. I saw one on the 12th of August. That's a second generation butterfly. There were 78 days between me last seeing it there in May and seeing it on the 12th of August. That's pretty unique for Ireland, though. That is a serious indicator of how good the conditions were in Ireland from March right the way through in 2025.
To the end of the summer.
Yes.
It's been a great summer.
It has.
Particularly the late summer.
It has. And there's another factor here as well. We're looking at painted ladies. You mentioned painted lady to me earlier. Europe is boiling. It was the other day in Malta Airport, it was 40 Celsius. You can't breed in those conditions if you're a butterfly. The plants are parched. So what have they done? They've moved north. Mm. They've moved to us, like the swallows do. They've moved to us to find green, verdant, succulent food plants. That's another reason we've a big boost. In early August this year, birdwatcher friend of mine saw hundreds of red admiral at Carnsore Point in Wexford coming in off the sea, along with lots of painted lady and silver Y moths.
Now you say August. That was August. They were only coming in then. Is that not very late?
No, they weren't coming in just then. It's just an incidental thing where he was there on the 2nd of August, you know, looking for birds, and I saw this big influx. We've had influxes, I would say, from April on.
But is that not very late, August?
It is, but because of the conditions in Europe, you remember the forecasts and the heat waves that they had in Europe, even in the UK, with 34 Celsius, etc. Butterflies, oddly enough, we associate them with sunshine and heat, etc., etc., but to an extent. Butterflies are cold-blooded. They cannot withstand extreme heat. Mm. So you can be in the most beautiful habitat in the country at 2 o'clock on a summer's day in baking heat and you'll see nothing. You won't even see a bumblebee because they go into cover. It's too hot for them. So they can only regulate their body heat to an extent. But once the temperature gets too high, they're gone. Think about it for a moment, Terry. 35 Celsius is our body temperature of a healthy person. Yeah. But same for a butterfly. But the same for a butterfly. The temperature on the microsites they favour, like these sunny sheltered spots they favour, that's over 35 Celsius.
Yeah.
That would kill them. They have to go into cover. So that's why, funnily enough, on hot but very wind, even blustery days in August, I saw loads of small tortoiseshell and red admiral, because the blusteriness was keeping the microsites cool enough for them to still be active. So on calm, still days like we had around the middle of August and in early July as well, that you would think that's perfect. They're active early in the morning and later in the afternoon on those days. The middle of the day,
siesta time.
Siesta time, with the odd little sortie to see what's going on, but then they're back to the shade.
Now, it's not just me that has noticed the large influx of butterflies this year. We've had a number of emails in from all around the country regarding butterflies. One here from Lorraine Reid. Over the summer, I've noticed a lot of painted ladies and small tortoiseshell butterflies in my garden. And she's in County Mayo. And they all have damaged wings. And I've noticed that a lot of the damage appears to be symmetrical. I was wondering if you've come across this before, and I've attached a photo of same as an example. Now, there's the photo. What do you think of that?
Well, Lorraine's experience would be like mine. I've seen lots of painted lady, lots of small tortoiseshells in the garden, and the symmetrical nature of the damage, that's where the butterfly has actually closed its wings when it got hot. A wren, a robin, a blue tit grabbed the edge of the wings and broke off the edge.
Right.
So, and because the wings were closed, it got the same place on both hind wings at the same time. So that explains the symmetrical nature of the damage.
We have a second one here.
Yeah.
Hi, Derek and gang. Could you help identify this blue butterfly? I took the photo of it in North Kerry along a quiet country road on the 11th of August 2025. We are halfway from the towns of Listowel in County Kerry and Abbeyfeel in County Limerick. And that's from Helen Broderick.
Well, what Helen is describing there is a beautiful, shining blue male common blue.
It's a lovely photo, isn't
it? It's a lovely photo. And in fact, our common blue is often referred to as Polyomatous Icarus, as in Icarus, the character who went too close to the sun. But it's got a third name. It's sometimes regarded as subspecies, and the subspecies is Maris color. Maris color means the colour of the sea.
Right, and that's exactly what it's
like. Oh, it's exactly what it is. And that's the colour of the sea with the sun shining on it.
Yeah.
That's another really beautiful butterfly. And it's simply just blue. But it's the depth of colour on a fresh common blue that's so eye-catching. It just hits the sweet spots of the soul. It really does.
Throughout the summer, through July, August, I've had lots and lots of butterflies in the garden. I've got a small butterfly bush, the Budley. It's not very, very large. But while it was in flower, it's just going out of flower now. I always had four species on it consistently. And they were the red admiral and the white butterfly and the small tortoiseshell and the painted lady. But in the garden, I would have seen small holly blues. They never ever landed on the buddleia.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. In Leakslip and Louisa Bridge, there's a couple of very large buddleias, one in particular covered in peacock, tortoiseshell, red admiral, painted lady, large and small whites, and there's a good holly blue population there. They don't go near it. They're interested in the bramble, the flowering bramble. They seem to like the bramble. They have a preference. Some butterflies have a preference for one plant over another. Now, I have never carried out the anatomical measurement, but I would guess that if I measured the proboscis of the holly blue, I would say it's very short, and it's possible that it can't reach the nectar.
The proboscis is the feeding tube.
It's the feeding tube. This is the straw, the hollow, I'm going to call it a tongue, but it's like a hollow tube, like a straw, that they suck up the sweet fluids. So they're choosing those plants for anatomical reasons. The nectar isn't available to some species where they have a very short proboscis.
What I find with the holly blue is he or she tends to spend a lot of time landing on ivy leaves. We have a lot of ivy in the garden.
Right, yeah.
But the flowers aren't there at the moment, so it can't be feeding off the leaf.
No, it's not feeding off the leaf. Now, they will settle on the leaves, literally. They do sit, especially in cloudy weather. They'll sit on the ivy leaves. It could be called the ivy blue as well as the holly blue, if you know what I mean, because you're right to spot them on ivy. They're definitely after the food.
Just before we finish, I'm seeing here a brown butterfly in the garden. That's the first one we've seen.
Yeah, that's a speckled wood, and you saw him just there at the hedge, which is where they really belong. Believe it or not, I was actually surprised. I was talking to Dr. Liam Lysett from the National Biodiversity Data Centre about this. Liam tells me that the speckled wood is Ireland's most recorded butterfly.
I'd never have thought that.
I would have thought red admiral, tortoiseshell. Yeah. It's the humble speckled wood. That lovely chocolate brown wings with cream speckles. That's our most recorded butterfly. I would have thought it would be the gaudy ones, but it's not. It's that. And we have good populations of it here. We have loads of hedges in Ireland, as you know, hundreds of thousands of kilometres of hedgerow with grassy banks. It loves that habitat, and that's why it's here. And in fact, as you can see here, you know, it likes plenty of grasses here, nice hedge, mixture of sun and shade. Yeah. That's perfect for them.
So 2025 has been a really, really good year for butterflies.
Absolutely magnificent. And I'm quite relieved, to be honest, because I was a bit depressed over the last two summers. I was almost, you know, that feeling of surreal disbelief when you're in a beautiful habitat on a quite nice day. We did have some nice days and nothing. It's not a nice feeling, and it's a feeling that something is wrong with the world. I feel at my best when what should be there is there.
Just like it is now.
Just like it is now.
Thank you very much indeed, Jesmond Harding. More details, as always, on the website rte.ie/Mooney.